but it's a tacit admission that the abduction phenomenon is also real and part of the larger UFO phenomenon, which is absolutely mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing that we're living in these times where we now know without a doubt that UFOs and alien abductions are not in the realm of conspiracy anymore. They are in the realm of stone cold fact. Stone cold fact.
Right on this position here, straight ahead from between the trees. There it is again. Watch, straight ahead off my flashlight there. Yeah, so there it is.
Hey, I see it too.
What is it?
We don't know, sir.
So, yeah, can I get some of
it? Yeah, it's a strange, small red light.
Hey, welcome back to Blurry Creatures. Thanks for tuning in week after week, telling friends, sharing the show, getting into the weird stuff with us. Can't say thank you enough to everyone out there who listens to the show. I'm 2 days into strep throat and somehow been able to get this show out to you guys this week. We recorded it last week with Tim. Come rain or shine, hell or high water, we are going to get content in your ears. If you want extra content in your ears and you appreciate the hustle that we do here on Blurry Creatures and the nonstop, we have not missed an episode through COVID, family crisis, tornadoes, sickness. It's been a crazy year. And we keep bringing you guys new content week after week through all of that. And it's because we love it and we love pursuing the truth. So if you want to support the show and help us keep going, because we're not giving up. We're going to keep working our tails off to bring you the truth and great stories. Go to blurrycreatures.com/members. Become a member, support the show. And we got some exciting news with Tim coming up. We're going to be hanging out with him at his conference in a few weeks. So, yeah, come hang out with us. And hope you enjoy this one. Thanks.
The history of our Earth is so different from what we can imagine.
Enjoy the journey.
The Smithsonian, and if they found out about a large skeleton somewhere, was to go get it.
I'm going to assume at least one person is right, because if one person's right, it busts the paradigm.
It all goes back to the fallen cherub. And the problem with the modern-day church, they have a very truncated view of the supernatural.
This backdrop that's just pregnant with all kinds of meaning associated with this Mount Hermon event.
And this guy defects from the kingdom. That's a big deal.
Well, Tim, welcome back to Blurry Creatures. It's good to have you on the show. We can hop into it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Got us a lot of stuff coming up. Obviously, the Birthright Conference is coming to Nashville, and we were talking about that. And you and I had a phone call and talked about some ideas for Blurry Creature listeners.
Yeah, we decided to do a special Blurry Creatures event on Friday. That's the 6th of May from 2 to 3 o'clock. And it's going to be in the hotel. We have a room rented, a facility rented within the hotel, a space. And we're going to be having a discussion, an open discussion between me and you two guys there at the conference. And it's open to the public, obviously. We're going to have some chairs set up. And people are going to be coming and registering for the conference while this is going on as well. And this event is just part of the conference. It's not a separate ticket or anything. It's just part of the general admission. But it's a special event within the event that's designed for the Blurry Creatures audience. So basically what we're doing today, we're going to be doing live from 2 to 3 o'clock on Friday, the 6th of May. Now, on Friday, there's 3 hours of stuff happening. There's the Blurry event that we're doing from 2 to 3. Then I'm doing a book signing. And at the same time that I'm signing books and concluding our event, our special event with you guys, there's going to be interviews, live interviews happening behind the desk where I'll be signing books with some of the other speakers and all kinds of cool stuff happening on Friday. So Friday's about 3 hours long, and then Saturday's all day. Lectures and presentations and Q&A and all kind of stuff going on. So, and before I forget, let me say right out of the gates that I don't know, a lot of people in your audience probably don't know this, but I was getting contacted by a lot of people who wanted to drive to the conference or who were planning on driving, and the gas prices are just are making life difficult for them, the rising gas prices. So we decided to alleviate some of the financial pressure from the Biden economy and offer a huge discount on the tickets to the conference. So if you go to get your tickets right now, you can type in, you can use the promo code Brandon in all caps. Of course, Brandon signaling that Biden economy that's making it difficult for people to fill up their gas tanks. So if you type in Brandon in all caps in the promo code text box, you will get a $40 discount, basically a tank of gas for most cars. You get a $40 discount. It's a huge discount. So we want to help people be able to drive. A lot of people want to drive. And the people who already bought tickets, we are also offering a rebate. If you, there was an email sent out. So if you got an email from us, there's an opportunity for you to get a $40 rebate. You know, we want to help you as well. You know, we don't want people who already purchased tickets to be left out. So go to timothyalbrino.com. You click on the banner, the conference banner, or on the menu, and then use promo code Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, all caps, $40 off. There, I've taken the last excuse away from people not to come to this conference.
Let's go. That's right. Literally.
We're doing a special Blurry Bros event on Friday, and I'm giving a huge discount now on the tickets to help people get there. And it's, and by the way, the content we're covering on Saturday is going to be mind-blowing. Believe me, there's so much stuff happening. There's no other conference like this, because this conference is extremely focused. It's not just an eclectic mix of a bunch of people talking about a bunch of different stuff. It's a very focused conference. But there's also going to be some, let's call them celebrities at the conference. There's some special guests that are coming that I can't announce yet, that I don't know that I'll ever be able to announce. You just have to come to the conference and find out.
Well, Tim, yeah, it's awesome. Because like we talked on the phone a little bit about this, and I think one of the things that happens when you have a podcast is you sort of have this unofficial interactive conversation in your head with somebody that you're listening to. And it's usually the three of us having a conversation. And so we thought it'd be cool if you could come to the conference and you get to have that conversation with us. We'll sit down, do some Q&A, and you can, and people who listen to the show and then they've had all these questions for what, 8 episodes or something now, that you can ask us. So come on to the conference and interact with us in a live, we can maybe record it even. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Come meet Luke and Nate in Nashville, Tennessee
that's right.
And then also meet all the other speakers. You know, my partner, Gary Haven, who's an amazing guy. You guys, I can't wait for you guys to meet Gary. Gary's an amazing guy. I always say this about Gary Haven. By the way, Gary Haven is the founder of Curves. Remember the women's fitness franchise Curves, mm-hmm, back in the 90s? Gary and his wife Diane founded Curves, and they're just the most amazing people. Gary is the most honorable man of integrity that I know. He's a mentor of, mm-hmm, mine, and he's going to be talking about how COVID has accelerated us towards transhumanism. And Gary's an amazing speaker. So, and then of course, Joe Allen from Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, one of the world's leading experts on transhumanism. Mancow Muller, famous radio personality from Chicago. Mancow's a party in a bag. I mean, that guy's just wild. And so, you know, you can come hang out with all of us, meet all of us. And then there's going to be other special guests there as well. The conference is actually being coordinated. I haven't said this to anybody, but the conference is actually being coordinated by a woman named Joanna Daniels, who happens to be the wife of Trey Daniels from POD, who is also going to be in attendance. So there's going to be a lot of cool people there. And I haven't really publicized a whole lot of that, but I probably should have. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun.
Here comes the boom.
Here comes the boom.
Ready or not.
Here comes the boys from the South.
Dude, I used to love POD back in the day, man.
I know, man.
That's awesome. Being California kids, it was like, they're there from San Diego, I think.
Yeah, they are.
Tim, I love it. We're excited to see you. Excited to hang out with you in person. You know, we do a lot of FaceTime here on the old email machine, computer, and it'll be fun to get to hang, interact, and listen to your presentations and get to.
Yeah, and this isn't, by the way, for the audience, this is not a huge conference. So you're not going to be sort of lost in the crowd. We did not want to do a big conference because we knew people are still hesitant to fly and to travel in this post-COVID era. And so we wanted it to be a smaller, more intimate conference. So, you know, there's probably only going to be a few hundred, maybe 500 people there, maybe 1,000. But it's not a big conference. So it's really a very intimate space. And, you know, so you can get up close and personal with everybody and ask questions and shake hands. And it's that kind of an event. And again, I probably should have been saying this all along. And we're already almost filled on the conference. So we've almost filled the space. There are tickets left. But especially with this Brandon discount, they're filling up quick.
Awesome. Well, everyone out there, go get a ticket. Come hang out with us. Come hang out with Tim. Hear a consolidated message on transhumanism. We love it. But today's topic, let's get into it, because Joe Rogan put this out on his feed that UFOs left radiation burns and unaccounted for pregnancies, Pentagon report claims, 1,500 pages of UFO-related material from the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program just came out. I guess it's a secretive U.S. Department.
This,
defense program.
This is an article actually that was published yesterday by the Sun paper, which is by the U.S. division of the British paper, the Sun. And the Sun actually filed a Freedom of Information Act request in 2017, right after the New York Times broke the story about the Pentagon's secret program, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, and the work that they had been doing. And of course, the New York Times published that now famous video of the Tic Tac UFO, which isn't a Tic Tac, by the way. It's a flying saucer. It's a saucer. It's not a Tic Tac shaped UFO. It's just your typical flying saucer, which most people don't realize that, but it's evident. The images make that evident in the video. And so it took 4 years for the Pentagon to finally release the documents that were requested by the Sun. And so
did you read them last night?
Well, I read about them. I don't believe that the documents have been
all 1500.
Well, they haven't. I don't believe that the Sun has released the documents. They've just they've published a few articles highlighting the most important topics, points from the documents, and which are actually quite fascinating. The documents include government commissioned scientific reports and letters to the Pentagon regarding the UFO phenomenon, including a fascinating report prepared for the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, entitled Anomalous Acute and Subacute Field Effects on Human and Biological Tissues. The report investigates injuries to, quote, human observers by anomalous advanced aerospace systems. It documents 42 such cases from medical files and 300 similar unpublished cases. And it notes that these injuries were likely caused by electromagnetic radiation from, quote, energy-related propulsion systems and exposures to anomalous vehicles, especially airborne and when in close proximity, end quote. And I'm reading from the article that was published by The Sun. The list of documented injuries includes radiation burns, brain and nerve damage, heart problems, and sleep disturbances, among others. It even includes cases of, quote, apparent abduction, unaccounted for pregnancy, sexual encounters, experience of telepathy, and perceived teleportation. So these documents that come from the Pentagon, that come from the government, amount to a tacit admission by the Pentagon that UFOs and alien abductions are real. And those are my words. That's not from the article. That's what we can draw, logically conclude from the article. This is a tacit admission by the Pentagon that not only are UFOs real, the Pentagon already admitted that back in 2017 with the Nimitz incident, the Tic Tac shaped craft, and all of the other things that were said during that time. But now we're getting an admission from the government, a tacit admission. So it's not an overt admission, but it's a tacit admission that the abduction phenomenon is also real and part of the larger UFO phenomenon, which is absolutely mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing that we're living in these times where we now know without a doubt that UFOs and alien abductions are not in the realm of conspiracy anymore. They are in the realm of stone cold fact. Part of the documents, one of the documents that was released by the Pentagon proposes that it is possible to use the medical information that's been derived from the studies to, quote, reverse engineer UFOs from unknown provenance that may be a threat to the United States interest. Now, what have I been saying? What did I say last time I was on with you guys talking about UFOs? I said that the Pentagon is framing the UFO phenomenon in the context of a national security threat. And these documents basically prove that is, in fact, the case. The FOIA documents obtained by The Sun also include studies into advanced technologies such as invisibility cloaks and mind-controlled robots, as well as research that explores the possibility of communicating with alien civilizations and plans for deep space exploration and colonization. So this is quite the revelation that's just come out of the Pentagon. And by the way, we also learned that $12 million, learned through this document dump, that $12 million was awarded to Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies to study, quote, advanced aerospace weapon threats from the present out to 40 years in the future. And Bigelow, anyone who knows anything about Skinwalker Ranch should be familiar with the name Bigelow. Bigelow was the billionaire who funded the NIDS program at the ranch. In fact, it was his program, the NIDS program, which was a scientific study in which they tried to figure out what the heck's going on at Skinwalker Ranch. And all kinds of crazy things happened. Read the book, Hunt for the Skinwalker, by, I believe his name is Colm Keller and George Knapp. And Keller was one of the scientists working on that project. I believe I got his name right. Maybe I got his name wrong. But he definitely, George Knapp was the co-author on that book. Hopefully I got the title of the book right. I read the book last year, and it's a great book. In a letter from 2009, which was also part of this data dump, this FOIA request data dump, Senator Reid describes how the program has already identified, quote, several highly sensitive, unconventional aerospace technologies, which required, quote, extraordinary protection. So again, national security threat. We are now definitely outside of the realm of conspiracy here, and very much, as I said, in the realm of stone cold fact as it pertains to UFOs. And all of this comes as the Senate recently passed an amendment to the latest defense bill, which establishes a new office at the Pentagon called the Anomaly Surveillance and Resolution Office, ASRO, which will be administered by the Defense Secretary and the Director of National Intelligence. And the ASRO will have access to information regarding UFOs from the intelligence community and the Defense Department. And once again, we'll be investigating the health impacts and national security concerns of the UFO phenomenon at large. That's where we are. That's where we are.
Yeah.
So you think these documents are tampered to, like, obviously they're coming out at a certain time. They had 4 years to release the documents. Do you think that they're sort of massaged? There's a narrative like, okay, we'll tell the public, but we're going to tell them what we think.
Yes. In fact, in the documents, there's a statement made, and the Sun points this out, that I believe it's in the paperwork that they got from the Pentagon, and I don't have it in front of me, but I was reading it earlier today, in which there's a statement made to the effect that there's more classified information that cannot be published that would confirm the things that have been released, something to that effect, which I thought was an astounding admission from the Pentagon in these papers.
Tim, there was something else this week too. I don't know if you saw it, and I think it's interesting and pertinent to this conversation, but the New York Post had an article about a U.S. warship that was shadowed by two car-sized balls of light. Did you happen to see that?
I did not. So, is that a recent report?
This is recent. This is yesterday.
Wow.
So it comes out that the USS Kearsarge is the latest vessel to reportedly had a UFO encounter as the U.S. military begins to open up about the mysterious phenomenon. This is out of the New York Post. Mm-hmm. Essentially what happens is two car-sized balls of light followed and tailed this warship. It evaded anti-drone weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that they were spotted at night by the deck watch, could not gain thermal targeting lock on them. And interestingly enough, this is the same sort of thing where they're talking about these are not man-made, not foreign state actors, and it's a national security threat. And the guy that released this is Dave Beatty, who was also the one that had produced the film about the Nimitz encounters, about the Tic Tac. And so this comes out the same week. And so what I want to ask you is that, like, this is not accidental. They keep pounding this is a national security threat. Why are they doing that? Like, what do you think the push is with that? Because we had you on before, we talked about the whole abduction phenomenon, and we know that there's a lot of nefarious stuff going on there, but we also look at these events that happen, Tic Tac, and now this one with the USS Kearsarge, and it's like they're not getting attacked by these UFOs in the way that we see in the movies or we would have, like, with a threat from a hostile nation here. Like, they're not attacking, they're just sort of menacing, following. These things are doing things that defy, you know, our technology and the physics of our own technology. To me, it reminds me of the whole state of emergency that our governments used in the last 2-3 years in order to enact things that essentially infringed upon and took away our own freedoms. If you haven't woken up in the last, you know, 5 to 6 years, especially in the last 3 years, it's time to wake up, because they're telling you what they think you need to hear and what they want you to hear, and they're leading you down a certain path. Even with the freedom of information, I think Nate made a good point. They're not going to release things and just release them. There's going to be a measure of, you know, cloak and dagger. So what are your thoughts on all that? Because it's shocking, and then at some points it's not at the same time, right? Maybe because we live in this space.
Well, first of all, let's reestablish the point that we discussed in a previous episode, that when we say the government and we wonder what they know about UFOs, it's important to realize that the government, in fact, that's actually stated in one of these documents as well, really doesn't know much about UFOs, the government, the broader government. Mm-hmm. Even if we were to focus on the Pentagon, what does the Pentagon know? Well, the answer would be almost nothing. There's individuals who are in the Pentagon who have the clearance, the cosmic clearance, to know the details about the UFO situation. The alien presence is probably a much more accurate way to put it. They know about the alien presence, and not in some abstract or distant way. They're very much they're very well informed and have, let's say, seen the craft, touched the craft, maybe even interacted with the entities. Those would be very few people working at the Pentagon, you know. And so the government at large knows almost nothing, but individuals within the military-industrial complex who are interfacing with the private contractors, like we talked about in the alien episode, those individuals know everything there is to know. And these military contractors, such as the aerospace contractors, especially, I should say, the aerospace contractors, such as, Lockheed Martin and the Skunk Works program at Lockheed Martin, those classified, highly classified programs that you have to have cosmic clearance to access. Those guys are way down the road from where we are right now. They're not only do they know about the craft, they've retrieved them, reverse engineered them to some degree, created hybrid craft, and are already hundreds of years advanced. And I'm talking about the human players in this game.
Right.
Are hundreds of years
advanced.
It's Bob
Lazar, right? It's this whole Bob Lazar thing.
Well, Bob Lazar was working for one of those contractors. They were trying to figure out how the reactor worked, because they run on a, they operate, the saucers operate on a reactor. I think we talked about that. It's a matter antimatter reactor, and it creates gravity waves.
Tim, that's 25 years ago. So I mean, this is
well,
not
that's
a
what
new
I mean.
Program.
Yeah, they're 100. Yeah. Those guys are flying around in hybrid craft that we've reverse engineered, and we've taken components that we can derive from the Earth, and we've tried to copy what the exotic materials that the aliens are incorporating into their craft, and we've made these hybrid craft that aren't as good as the alien technology, but that are far advanced to what we have, our conventional aircraft. And the president of the United States, Joe Biden, you think he could go and visit one of these facilities, like the S-4 facility, or another secret facility, underground facility that we don't know about, where these craft are stored? No way. No way. He doesn't have clearance to go down there. He doesn't have the need to know. Presidents come and go, but these people don't come and go. You know, this is why I coined the term the dumb state last time we were talking, because that's really who knows about UFOs, the deep state. No, the deep state's political. Deep state's political. OK, the deep state's about, you know, getting rid of Donald Trump and spying on all of us and, you know, that kind of thing, and running proxy wars in Afghanistan and now Ukraine. That's the deep state, and covering for Hillary Clinton. That's the deep state. I'm talking about the dumb state. I'm talking about the deep underground military base complexes that crisscross the subterranean world beneath America and are connected by the magneto-leviton trains.
Who do you think is really operating that system?
People that we would never know their names. We wouldn't know who they were. They're obscure generals and colonels and contractors. And they have at this point formulated what Richard Dolan coined as a breakaway civilization. Because are they associated with our government? Yes, there's a loose association. A lot of the funding comes from the government. But remember what we talked about last time. In black projects, a lot of the money has been accrued in an unscrupulous manner so that there's no oversight from Congress, so that the American people do not have the right to know, because it's not their money. It's not our money. They're getting black. They have black projects and they're funding it with black money. That gets very dark. That gets very, very dark.
I guess I just wonder, like, what do you think that their agenda is, and what do you think? You think it, like, goes all the way back to the Vatican and some of these New World Order players? And,
well, I'm not sure that their agenda goes beyond developing alien technology ostensibly for the government, for the U.S. government in our case, and creating this breakaway civilization. I know people think I'm crazy, but I tend to think that we already have installations on Mars. And we already have people living on Mars, and there's real estate on Mars, let's say, for the elite. Now, that's, of course, complete speculation. There's no way I could ever prove that, but it's just an inference based on the things I think are provable. But so the all of this that we're seeing now, the admissions of the Pentagon about UFOs, it's shocking, because we're here. We're basically entering the era of disclosure. But at the same time, it's sort of old hat for those of us who've been paying attention to ufology, you know, over the decades. But the public at large certainly has never really grappled with the reality that UFOs are real. And furthermore, which is the more important reality, that alien abductions are real and are happening. That's really the part of all of this that I think should cause people to completely reconfigure their paradigms about what's going on planet Earth and so forth.
Yeah, the days of speculation are done. And the cool thing is we've talked about this a lot on our show, and more it's trickling out. Do you think the timing now, there is more than just, oh yeah, people have phones in their pockets and this information is getting out, but that there is some plan that that's being unrolled?
Well, the remember, disclosure, the phenomenon itself is forcing the government's hand as it pertains to disclosure. It's the phenomenon. It's not that it's their plan or that, you know, or that the public is forcing disclosure. The phenomenon is forcing disclosure. And that doesn't mean that the alien phenomenon, that the alien presence wants our government to disclose their presence to the public. That's not what that means. What I mean is that the aliens are taking a more hostile posture, like we talked about last time. They're yeah. beginning to harass our battleships, like you were just talking about with those orbs. Mm-hmm. There are more and more encounters happening between our military personnel, especially the airmen and the Air Force. It's just too much. It's accelerating, and it's becoming a more hostile phenomenon, and the Pentagon just simply cannot cover it up anymore. And so when you can't cover something up, the next best place to get in front of the story and trying to control the release of the information and spin it in a way that saves face, because that's really what this is about. Because the Pentagon, there's all kinds of questions implicated that are associated and are immediately raised when you start to think about what the Pentagon is admitting to. So how long have you known about UFOs? Abductions? How long have you known people are being abducted? Okay, let's go back to Roswell now. What about that, right? Very uncomfortable questions for the government. So the Pentagon is really trying to pump the brakes. Believe me, they're trying to pump the brakes. That's why they took 4 years to release these documents. Mm-hmm. They're not excited about having to do this, about disclosure. So I don't think that it's some kind of an Illuminati plan for disclosure. In fact, you know, people who are familiar with my book will remember that I have a diagram in the book, and there's three components that I depict as circles, and these are concentric circles that are converging, and each of these circles represents a different, let's call it, a topic that's developing right now in society, and the three of those three subjects, topics that are developing, phenomenons, let's call them, are a new religion, which I've dubbed apotheotheism, the post-human paradigm, which has to do with transhumanism, and the alien threat. And the alien threat is complex. It's not that there's one faction and that just the notion of ETs in general is posing a national security threat. No, it's a very specific faction that's posing a national security threat. And so from my perspective, what's going to happen is the world and is soon going to face an adversary, the likes of which it has never seen before, and an adversary that is in possession and deploying technology that we simply have no defense against. Can we shoot down some of their craft? Yes, we can. I think we have high energy beam weapons that we can use. We have sonic weapons. We have hypersonic weapons. Yes, we can. We can make a dent, let's say, if we were to go to a full-scale war with the Greys, because that's the faction that's taking this hostile posture. And the reason why their posture is becoming more hostile, by the way, is because their program is almost complete. And the program is a program of hybridization. Okay, so and it must be coming close to completion, because they would not be taking the posture, adopting the posture that they are, if the program was not very far along. Because the beginning of the program was all about secrecy. It was all clandestine, and now they are allowing themselves, their presence, to be seen more. And so there's got to be a reason for that.
I know that, you know, you like to be forward thinking on a lot of these issues and topics, and you've researched it more than some guys and a lot of these theologians, and you have a lot of friends in this space. You're friends with guys at Prophecy Watchers. You're friends with, you know, people who are on the trail of the Nephilim and make documentaries, and you know, you've been in this space a long time. And it sounds like you've come to the theories you've been presenting for a while are starting to come true. Are people calling you now and having harder conversations? Maybe they took a different theory or a different approach, or, you know, I don't know.
It's actually a really good question. The answer is no. A lot of the Christian, let's call them Christian ufologists, are so entrenched in their, it's really a theology, it's a doctrine regarding aliens that they're having a hard time quantifying what's coming out of the Pentagon, because what the Pentagon is disclosing is a physical phenomenon, vehicles, aerospace vehicles, not of this world, in the words of the astrophysicist Davies, that is a consultant with the Pentagon and who briefed Congress. And so I think some of those guys are having a hard time grappling with this phenomenon, because it was easy when it was sort of still in the realm of conspiracy and nebulous and abstract. It was easy to write it off as a spiritual phenomenon or demons or something like that. But now that we have to grapple with it in the national security context, in a kinetic context, I think those spiritualist or supernaturalist explanations simply fail. They fail to address the phenomenon in the totality of its complexity.
Yeah. And I just assume those people, you know, you guys would have had arguments over the years.
Well, I've never really argued with anybody, but I'm sort of known as the guy who's wrong about the alien stuff in the Christian circles, you know.
Or maybe just like friendly conversations that get a little opinionated or heated. Not like.
No, conversations I've had behind the scenes with figures from, let's say, our community. I've been able, I think, to convince some of these guys that this is a physical phenomenon and that these do in fact constitute extraterrestrial alien entities, and that they have nothing to do with demons. I mean, the fact that they have the notion that they have anything whatsoever to do with demons, I think is completely debunked. You don't really have a leg to stand on. The demon theory of UFOs, I think I can say this with certainty, has been debunked, and it's been debunked by the data. The data has debunked it. It hasn't been debunked by another theological perspective or a New Age perspective or whatever. It's simply not relevant to the data, to the hard data that we have regarding UFOs and their occupants. They are not demons in the traditional Hebrew cosmological sense. They're not. They're simply not demons. And now, you know, are they demonic? And I always have to add this proviso. Are they demonic? Are they malicious? Are they malevolent? Yes, of course, but they're not demons. And we're talking about the Greys specifically, because if we talk about the other guys, which I know are also involved, then those guys would be the faction that I call the Elder Race. If you ask me, are they demonic? My answer would be yes and no. The bad ones are bad actors and the good ones are good actors. And who are the good ones? The good ones are those who are still faithful to the king. The bad ones are the apostate sons of God who are in a state of insurrection and rebellion against God, quote unquote, fallen angels. And yes, that is an angelic faction, the Elder Race. Those are the Nordics that people encounter, in my estimation. Now, it is possible that some of those are also hybrids. Let's keep that in mind. But I think that the root race of those beings are, in fact, the angelic Elder Race that preexisted us. Yes, the very same that the Bible talks about. So, and that's a good springboard into the answer that I think you guys are probing for here. So if we have these hideous, bulbous-headed, black-eyed, gray aliens, and they're even more hideous overlords, these insectalin creatures that are right out of a science fiction novel, and these are the creatures that are conducting the abduction program, and they are, then what's the end game? If they're being framed in a national security threat and we cannot defeat them and they are already supplanting us, let's say, with hybrids, then what's the end game? What happens from here? What happens? Well, I believe that we are going to need help, obviously, with this threat. That's why I call it the alien threat in my book, and that's how I often refer to it, as the alien threat. We're going to need help, and help is on the way. But it's not on the way from the good guys. I believe it's on the way from the bad guys posing as the good guys. And I believe that this Nordic race, and I think in this case it's going to be hybrids, are going to show up to save us. And in fact, I'll read this excerpt from my book so that I can illustrate this idea more precisely. So reading from my book, the contrast between the hideous gray alien invaders with bulbous heads, spindly limbs, and sinister black eyes, and the striking features of the golden blonde saviors who rally to our defense will be stark indeed. Like the riders of Rohan galloping into battle to break the siege of Minas Tirith just before the city falls to the orcish horde, Apollo and his consorts will make their grand appearance to deliver mankind from certain doom. And Apollo, by the way, is the Antichrist. There's the scenario that I'm talking about is a scenario in which the heroic progeny of the gods, the golden race, will appear to deliver mankind from the alien threat. So I talk about how the Insectolins intend to supplant the human species and subdue the Earth by stealth. There is no way that we can stop them. Their technology is unassailable and their hybrids are undetectable. So humanity is going to face an imminent extinction, or at the very least, subjugation to Insectolin overlords. And that is a terrifying prospect. And I really believe that those who are in the know within our government institutions and the military contractors and so forth understand that that is, in fact, a threat. Maybe there are factions, human factions, that are working with the Grace. That's also a possibility. Maybe some of the Luciferian elite have already made a deal with the Grace. Who knows? I mean, this is all speculation, of course.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to ask you earlier, it's technically possible that there could be divisions of our government working for both sides, which is just really confusing.
Well,
because I think we like to think that there's like a clear enemy and a clear good guy, and it's obviously the more you get into it, it's all going to be backwards.
Here's the real question, okay? Good guys and bad guys. We have from the biblical context, we have the loyal angelic faction. Yeah. And we have the disloyal, the apostate angelic faction. So there's a stark division between the good guys and the bad guys. Here's the really mind-boggling question. Is there a gray area in there? Is there sort of a middle ground where there's factions that are like not really thrown in with either side? Mm-hmm. Or that are just nominally
Bigfoot
loyal to the king? Now, perhaps, yes. Now, in my book, I actually, I'm going to try and skim to it as I'm stalling with my words here, but I probably won't be able to find it. But in my book, I quote a very interesting scripture from the Old Testament about Miros. I'm trying to flip to it here as I'm talking, but I'm probably not going to be able to find it. I didn't expect to be talking about Miros. It's in the chapter Rebellion, War, and Ruin for those who have read my book. But there's this bizarre reference to Miros. I'm almost there. Hey, why don't you guys talk to give me some time.
Yeah, Bigfoot's in there, Luke. Maybe he's the guy in the woods just trying to get away from it all.
Just camping, just trying to camp and be.
Like Jeremiah Johnson, just out there. They're just trying to leave me alone.
Exactly, just trying to harvest his berries in peace. And
that's right.
We're chasing him around with cameras.
No, yeah, I have a couple questions for Tim once he finds his.
No, go ahead, ask me as I'm flipping through.
So one thing, Tim, and maybe you covered it, but maybe I just was wondering, like, maybe more explicitly, when we were talking about the uptick in activity, and you said that like the Greys are now not worried about us understanding what they're doing because they're almost to the end game. What is that end game? Is that a complete hybrid race? Are we talking about, because I know we've talked about, hey, they're abducting, right? And then we have the government say, oh, by the way, unexplained pregnancies. And so this goes right along with our abduction episode we have with you and the things you talk about in your book. But if they're not so worried about being clandestine and kind of hiding out, and they're okay with exposure, you said they're getting close to
that would indicate to me, at least, that maybe I'm wrong, but that would indicate to me that they're nearing the completion of their program,
which is
to supplant the human race with hybrids,
okay,
or planetary acquisition. They're here to take over. They're the opposite of the Borg from Star Trek. Instead of assimilating other civilizations and cultures and technologies into their collective, they assimilate themselves into other civilizations to take over from within by stealth through advanced hybrids, which Dr. Jacobs dubs hubrids. And hubrids, for all intents and purposes, are human, except for they retain certain trademarks of the Greys, which make them superhuman, which make them, I always liken them to Sith lords. It's almost, and they very much are like that, by the way. They're not, they have no empathy. They have no human empathy.
And Are they walking around?
They are walking right around. They are indeed. Now, are they senators? Are they working at your local, down the road at your local gas station? I mean, I don't know how well integrated they are, but I know that over the last decade, and again, Dr. Jacobs, David Jacobs, who's the leading authority on this, has documented the progression of the integration of hybrids into human society. And they had to learn how to do the most rudimentary, fundamental things concerning life on Earth, like what the hell's a refrigerator? How do I use it? How do I use a television? How do I drive a car? What do I do when I go into a grocery store? How do I act normal in human society? They had to learn these things. And it was the abductees who had to teach them, by the way. And Jacobs referred to them as personal project hybrids that would be assigned to an abductee. And many of these abductees, women especially, horrifically abused by these hybrids who could completely control them. Now, let's not diminish the Grey's ability not only to control our motor functions when they want to, but to completely control our perception of reality. That is something that hardly anybody talks about. Carla Turner talked about it in her books at length. She called it virtual reality scenarios, that the Greys could create virtual reality scenarios that to you would seem like altered reality, when in fact the Greys are just screwing with your mind and your perception, using both technology and extremely powerful telepathic capabilities. And I believe, as I've said before with you guys, that the human species is a organically telepathic species, that Adam and Eve were fully telepathic, that in fact the angels are telepathic, and that most communication is not with words, but with thoughts. And we've lost the ability for whatever reason, either because of the fall or because God saw fit to dampen that ability in the human species to protect us, to shield us perhaps. Or because, as I said, because of genetic degeneration, we've simply, our equipment is broken. I mean, there's a lot to be said about genetic degeneration, by the way, in all of this, but I did find this part in my book. So there's a verse in Isaiah 63. There's a verse in which the Lord declares, "I have trodden the winepress alone. From the nations, no one was with me. I looked, but there was no one to help. I was appalled that no one gave support. So my own arm achieved salvation for me, and my own wrath sustained me. I trampled the nations in my anger. In my wrath, I made them drunk and poured their blood on the ground." And I put this in a galactic context, by the way, and people will understand that if they read my book, if they read the chapter Rebellion, War, and Ruin. And I believe that what some of these verses are actually referencing. Now, there's always a dual interpretation to a lot of these prophetic verses in the scriptures. There's a dual interpretation. It's talking about things that were currently happening concurrent with the writing of the prophecy, but also referencing things that happened in the very distant past and foreshadowing things that would happen in the future. So sort of rather than a dual perspective, there's almost a triune perspective to all of this. So. And then I go on to say, remarkably, the Song of Deborah identifies the faithless bystanders who declined to join the ranks of the king when he marched on the field of Edom. And I believe that the field of Edom was Mars, by the way. "Curse ye Meros," said the angel of the Lord. "Curse ye bitterly the inhabitants thereof, because they came not to help the Lord, to help the Lord against the mighty." And then I go on to write, two questions necessarily arise from this scenario. Who are the mighty against whom the Lord requested support, and who or what is Meros? The answer to the first question is apparent: the forces of the dragon's confederacy. And according to ancient rabbinic tradition, the answer to the second question is a planet. So I go on to talk about how Meros, according to the ancient Jewish perspective, that Meros was in fact a planet. and that these verses are talking about a galactic war, rebellion that happened in a pre-Adamic context, and that there were the citizens of this planet did not aid the Lord, the King of Heaven, in his war against the dragon. Now, that's pretty cool. I mean, that it so broadens the paradigm, the biblical paradigm, to such, in my view, an exciting extent. And it's giving us, again, in my view, glimpses of this conflict that happened a long time ago, way before the creation of Adam, that laid waste to our solar system, that led to the obliteration of the planet that was once between Mars and Jupiter, which I believe the Bible calls Rahab. And so we were talking about, what about this gray area between the good actors and the bad actors? What about just like entities, being civilizations that are just living and out there and not really taking sides in the conflict? And so I read that passage just to demonstrate that that is not an unbiblical concept. And so the Lord was very angry with whoever Meros was. Curse ye Meros, curse the inhabitants thereof bitterly. Angry because they did not go out to help the Lord against the mighty. Against the mighty. Who were the mighty that the Lord was calling for reinforcement to fight? And I believe that the answer is the dragon and his confederacy.
I mean, we've heard some wild stories from like Bigfoot gets on UFOs and goes and hangs out with the star people and comes back, and
speculation abounds. Let's just put it that way.
Well, sure, but I'm saying is that people have a hard time wrapping their mind around God because, you know, they get into these rabbit holes without sort of a biblical paradigm, and they don't understand that all this stuff fits into
they don't understand paradigm. That there is a biblical paradigm that encompasses all of these things. It must encompass all of these things, okay? Because if the Bible is true, the Bible says that all things were created by him and through him and for him, referencing the Son of God, and that everything that was created, whether visible or invisible, thrones, dominions, principalities, powers, what have you, was all created through him and for him and by him. And so that's a unified, that is a singular universe. And everything that exists in that universe, no matter what it is, fits within the biblical paradigm. Because the biblical paradigm is Christocentric. It revolves around Christ. It doesn't revolve around us. It doesn't. And that's where people have a hard time. See, if your biblical paradigm revolves around man, I know we've talked about this, that human-centric perspective, that anthropocentric perspective, if that's what your paradigm hinges on, your biblical paradigm, then you're going to have a hard time with the notion of galactic empire, of a galactic kingdom of heaven, and because your whole focus is on the earth. You think that we're the only players in the game. Clearly, we're not. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, there's nobody who can legitimately have a paradigm in which we're the only players in the game. We're clearly not. In fact, we are obviously the younger brothers, the younger siblings of a more advanced race of beings who, Jesus says, we are going to be like at the resurrection. We're going to be like the sons of God in heaven at the resurrection. And we ourselves will also be sons of God, siblings in the family into which we were supposed to be members from the very beginning, and which Adam was a son in that family. He was the younger sibling. And so when the Bible talks about these principalities, and we've said this before on your show, we've pretty much said all of this before on your show. When the Bible talks about principalities, it's not talking about entities. It's talking about realms governed by princes. Jesus is called the Prince of Princes in Daniel. So you tell me, what is a prince? What does a prince do?
It's a regent.
That's right. They govern. There's realms. They govern. Mm-hmm. And so there's a governing class, there's a ruling class, a royal family, a royal house, and we were supposed to be part of it. And that's the story of mankind, and it's the great tragedy of the fall, and it's the glorious message of the gospel, the restoration of Adam back to the family of God, back into the house of God, into his father's house, the ring's back on his finger, the sandals are on his feet, new clothes, he's back in the family as a son, where he belongs. And that is a position of government. It's the ruling class. And so it's an empire. People really get mad at me when I say this, but the kingdom of heaven is an empire. It's not the empire from Star Wars, the empire that's ruled by the Sith, quite the opposite. It's the empire that's ruled by the King of Heaven, the Son of God himself. He's the king, and everything in the universe is subject to him. And everything that rebels against him is in a state of insurrection and damnation with the dragon. And the only beings in the universe who've been redeemed from the dragon are us, human beings, the human race. So the existence of extraterrestrials does not alter the gospel of Christ at all, because Christ did not become an angel. Jesus, the Son of God, did not become an angel to redeem angels. He didn't become a gray alien to redeem gray aliens or what have you, or Nordic to redeem Nordics. He became a man to redeem mankind, and that's the gospel.
Yeah.
And so the existence of extraterrestrials has no bearing whatsoever on the gospel, because extraterrestrials do exist. They're called the sons of God. They're called the angels.
So obviously the ancient alien crowd believes you, and they get into all this, so they just have a completely different interpretation of things. Did, let's say, pre-flood, those societies that we've talked extensively about, the megalith builders and the dynasties of closest to the golden age, do you think UFOs were coming and going back then?
Yes.
And they were just,
yes,
these realms were completely interacting.
Of course, because we just have to ask a simpler question. Was mankind interacting with extraterrestrials thousands of years ago? The biblical answer is unequivocally yes. Absolutely, he was. Again.
So civilizations look like Star Wars in the future.
Well, again, we're talking about these ambiguous beings that the Bible designates as angels. And so they are extraterrestrials. 100%. The earth wasn't even created when the sons of God were shouting for joy, watching its foundations be laid. It wasn't even in existence yet. They were there already. They are therefore extraterrestrials, and there's no way to work yourself around that. I mean, you just have to rearrange the furniture in your mind. You have to, because anything less than that interpretation is erroneous. They are extraterrestrial. I mean, the fact that they're extraterrestrials, they are. So if the sons of God, the angels, are extraterrestrial, and you ask me, were there ancient aliens, ancient extraterrestrials interacting with mankind? The answer is yes. It's in the biblical answer is yes. In fact, go all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Who were Adam and Eve interacting with in the garden? Who was that? The serpent in the garden. I believe it was a member of the elder race. Indeed, the devil himself, as John tells us, who is of that race, who is of that angelic race. He is therefore an extraterrestrial. And so Adam and Eve were interacting with an extraterrestrial in the Garden of Eden. And indeed, that being, that extraterrestrial being, was offering Eve knowledge. So the ancient alien people, it's not that their premise is wrong, it's that their allegiance is wrong. And by the way, a whole lot of their data is wrong too. A whole lot of their data. It's just a joke. I mean, almost everything they say about megaliths and stuff is just complete hogwash. so that aside, their premise is correct.
Yeah.
Yes, there were ancient aliens interacting with the human race. Yes, it's their allegiance that's wrong.
Most Christians don't know how advanced the technology was. When we think of angels, when most Christians think of angels, they just think that they're mostly spiritual beings that kind of leave us alone, and they're sort of slip in and out. But I mean, we've interviewed some people that say some of these angels take on the forms of things that look like technology.
How do they know that?
He can see them. That's what they say.
Okay. But, and how do we know that they can see them?
No, I'm saying we brought on a couple guys who can see those realms, like angels and demons, and he claims
allegedly can see those realms.
Yeah,
I think that's an important word to put in front of that statement. You know, I've met.
Oh yeah.
You know, listen, I'm going to tell you something about human beings. It is exceedingly easy to manipulate human perception. All you have to do is go in the woods and eat the right kind of mushrooms. It is exceedingly easy. Our perception, especially when we are dealing with an advanced, technologically superior, and telepathically powerful race of beings, And so abductees, for example, as we've talked about in the past, are always subjected to telepathic manipulation, not only in the way that they are perceiving events as they are actually occurring, but in the way that they remember the way the events unfolded. I have learned not to trust human perception when talking about these things, because we are so easy to deceive, because we have perceptual cataracts, and we are a race that is very underdeveloped technologically speaking, and we are, for lack of a better description, we are somewhat of a stupid race. I mean, what we know is so little, so rudimentary, what we know about the universe and life and everything. We think we know so much because, hey, we know about DNA and we can build rocket ships and we drive around in cars and we have internet. But in reality, those technologies are less than 100 years old, are less than 50 years old in some cases. We are infants as it pertains to knowledge and technology. We are infants. We're very susceptible to deception, very susceptible on many levels. I don't even, you know, for example, a lot of people will say, well, I know that UFOs are supernatural because I saw one disappear. Well, that is by no means proof that that object has some kind of a supernatural capability. In fact, we know, and when I say we, I mean good ufologists who've done their homework and who know the right resources to read and the ones not to read. And that's a whole nother discussion, but that UFOs generate, and when I say UFOs, of course, I mean the advanced aerospace vehicles, that the government's talking about in these documents. Remember, not in the realm of conspiracy anymore. We know that these advanced aerospace vehicles produce gravity waves, and that they generate these gravity waves using matter-antimatter reactors. And that when these reactors are fully powered, that the gravitational field is around the craft, it distorts space-time around the craft. So when fully powered, you can't see the craft anymore. Not because it's disappeared into another dimension, not because it's supernatural, but because it is distorting the space-time continuum around it. It is distorting the fabric of space using gravity waves. And we know that gravity distorts light. We know that. That's why we can see certain stars that we shouldn't be able to see that should be on the other side of the sun. But we can see them because the sun bends light because of its gravitational pull. And of course, you have the big community of Christians who are now flat earthers who deny all of this and reject it out of hand and get very angry with me when I talk about all of this. But it doesn't matter. I'm telling you that UFOs use gravity waves. They warp the space around them. And when they are fully energized, when those reactors are fully energized, the UFOs, the craft, the aerospace vehicles disappear. And it's not that they disappear because they're gone. They disappear because they have a gravitational distortion. The gravity field is distorting the space around the craft.
You know what? You know what? That's interesting, Tim, because a lot of people say cryptids can thing, but a lot of people will say they can still kind of see them in the distance. And
I am not denying the possibility that, in fact, I am a proponent of hyperspace theory. I am a proponent of hyperspace theory. And hyperspace theory posits that there are other spatial dimensions, not other parallel worlds. That's a separate deal. There are other spatial dimensions that the fabric of our reality is, there are more facets to it than we can perceive. And that's what I mean when I say that we have perceptual cataracts. We see through a glass dimly or through a mirror dimly, as Paul says. We have perceptual cataracts. We can no longer perceive the dimensional totality of the world around us. But that doesn't mean that a parallel universe exists. That doesn't mean that the multiverse exists. All it means is that there are more spatial facets to the universe than we can perceive. That's all it means. Just like there are more wavelengths on the light spectrum that we can't perceive. We can't see an ultraviolet, but ultraviolet is there. And by the way, we can see an ultraviolet when we use technology. We can use technology that allows us to perceive ultraviolet rays, but with the naked eye, we can't. So those ultraviolet rays exist, we just can't see them. So in the same way, I'm a proponent of hyperspace theory that there are dimensional aspects of created order that are imperceivable. I call that perceptual black matter. They're there, but we can't perceive them. So I am a proponent of that. I don't want people to think that I'm not. I certainly am. I am not a proponent of the parallel universe or the parallel worlds theory. I don't believe that there's more than one universe. There's only one universe. And so if entities are coming to Earth from somewhere else, they're coming from somewhere within our universe. Now, might they be coming from under the ground? Might they be coming from, you know, who knows where? They could be coming from anywhere. But they could also just as easily be coming from Mars.
Well, that's what I'm saying, kind of saying, is that a lot of people come up with these wild and wacky theories about cryptids, that they're like coming into and from dimensions right in front of us, or going, you know, when they could just be easily be just manipulating space-time in front of them, just like a UFO does. And so you can't see them for a split second. They're still right here, but they're just...
Or they could be manipulating your perspective.
You're in the Matrix, Nate.
I know.
No, that's exactly right. They could be manipulating your perspective. So think about that, Nate. So rather than them manipulating space-time, instead, they have the telepathic capability to manipulate what you are perceiving. That's a whole different conversation. Now we're not talking about them changing the fabric of space and time, which the Grays can do with technology. But I mean, I should say warping, not changing, warping the fabric of space-time. But rather, now we're talking about creatures that maybe have the innate telepathic capabilities to distort your perception of them.
Or both, because the weird parts is when their footprints just seem to stop, or the physical part of their presence, the evidence is just gone. So
that's true. That's also true.
It seems like they have all the above, almost like Predator kind of cloaking. They can like do that, and then they can like phase in and out, but then they can mess with how you think, and then they can talk to you, because obviously they can telepathically communicate with people.
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard a lot. I've read and heard stories about telepathic communication from the Bigfoot creature. Now, here's what I'm going to say about Bigfoot. I love the Bigfoot topic. I'm going to go look for Bigfoot in my show. That's going to be, by the way, I shouldn't be announcing this yet, but since I mentioned my show, it's going to be going on Epoch TV. I will announce that officially when it happens. But I want to go look for Bigfoot. I really do, because I'm like in ground zero for this up here in Montana. But
yeah, need some help?
Guys can come with me. I'm absolutely convinced that Bigfoot exists. But here's a problem with Bigfoot. Here's a problem with cryptids in general, whether you're talking about Bigfoot or fairies or gnomes or dwarves or whatever. There's no data. There's almost no data. The Bigfoot topic has some data. There's some data there, but not nearly as much as data pertaining to aliens. I'm telling you, the data pertaining to aliens is voluminous. The data pertaining to Bigfoot is compelling, but it's not nearly as voluminous as we have for, let's say, alien abductions. So the Bigfoot data... And within that Bigfoot data, as you guys well know, there's a lot of hoaxers in the Bigfoot space, a lot. In fact, the Bigfoot space probably has the most hoaxers out of anything, way more than crop circles, because Bigfoot is such a ubiquitous phenomenon and so popular, especially it's like Americana. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's got a Bigfoot story, and a lot of those people just made their story up so that they can feel cool and talk about their Bigfoot encounter. So you got to understand, it's a minefield when you talk about Bigfoot and it's not that it's disinformation. It's just tall tales. There's a lot of tall tales in there. So someone can tell me, you know, I saw a Bigfoot and it just disappeared. And it's like, okay, all that is to me, it's a really interesting story. It's completely anecdotal. Now, there are things related to the Bigfoot phenomenon that I do not believe are anecdotal, that I do believe constitute hard evidence. But those pieces of data are few and far between. So Bigfoot is still still a very nebulous area of research. There's nothing really to grab onto. You have to take a lot of people's claims for granted, or not for granted. You have to take them with a grain of salt. Sure. And try and parse through what they're saying and try and figure out if, you know, is the person telling the complete truth? Are they embellishing? Are they confabulating? Were they drunk? Were they tripping on mushrooms? Or are they just straight lying? And there's, and believe me, and I, again, I, this is not to knock the Bigfoot topic. I'm going to take you guys with me. Go look for Bigfoot Montana.
Let's go.
Let's go.
And we'll, and just to make sure we get something on footage, we'll have somebody dress up like Bigfoot and run across the road.
I'm a big guy. I can do that.
Yeah, you can do that.
Just don't shoot me. Just don't shoot me.
No, I mean, it just, it's, everyone's got to dive into their field and spend their 1,000 hours. I mean, Jeff Meldrum has data, you know. Maybe not as much as the UFO data, but he's got the footprints and the casts, and he can prove.
And that's the kind of data that I find compelling.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of data that I don't find compelling is the people who will say to me, "Oh yeah, I saw Bigfoot, and it screamed and opened up a portal and went into the portal." Okay, that's a really cool story, and maybe it's true, but that's it. It's just an anecdotal, interesting story.
How do they gather evidence in a different way from the abductees? Is there
the abduction phenomenon has evidence, all kinds of, every kind of physical evidence that you can imagine. I mean,
like
people,
burns, incisions.
Oh yeah, people are gone. They're literally taken. The other neighbors have witnessed people being abducted. You come back with marks, sometimes scoop marks and cuts and things. You come back with implants. People can consciously recall the event, and they will recall an event and remember meeting somebody on that UFO that they've never met before in their life, and then they run into him at the grocery store, and the two people realize that they were on that freaking craft together. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. I mean,
that's wild.
I mean, the implants alone, the fact that people remember being implanted, and then they go get an X-ray, and there it is. I mean, you know, there's just a whole lot of scientific data that, and then there's the data, the psychological data. You have somebody, not so much anymore, because we've been bombarded with in pop culture with aliens and UFOs, so it kind of muddies the water. But back in the 60s, before really UFOs were well known to the public, before it was a pop culture thing, people were recounting experiences, abduction experiences over here in the United States, like in Nebraska, say, and then you'll get an abduction somewhere in Europe, out in some agricultural part of Europe, rural area in Europe, recounting the exact same details, the exact same kind of experience. So there's stuff like that as well. And so pretty much, I mean, then we have there's materials, there's crash retrieval evidence. And then, of course, we have the Pentagon now with everything it's admitting. So
wait. So hey, great segue. I don't know if you want to finish this thought, but I wanted to get back to that real quick. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, go ahead.
But the disclosure there. There's one thing that you said that I think we didn't touch on, and we haven't touched on a lot on the show, was that for whatever reason, in the midst of this, there's this 12 million or billion, whatever the number was, going to Bigelow. And then we connect that to Skinwalker, and I want to know what string you pull there, because it's got to be too coincidental that the guy that owned the Skinwalker Ranch now has an aerospace, or had an aerospace, has pre-existently had an aerospace company, from which he's a billionaire, bought Skinwalker Ranch, and now they're being awarded some research grant. You can't separate the two, and we didn't touch on that, but to me, because we haven't done a lot on Skinwalker Ranch. I know we want to get to that eventually, Nate, but we haven't really done much on that, or we've talked about it like sort of in asides, but not. And that just to me is just like, that's wild, just a little wild. And then Tim, you did talk about dark money, and you know, and we know that a lot of the ways they get around government oversight is the defense spending then offloads to the private sector, to mm-hmm. the complex, more or less, right? It's Raytheon,
military industrial complex.
It's Skunk Works, right? And they do the research, they do the stuff, and then the government doesn't have to follow all the rules in the private sector,
right?
Necessarily.
You can't file a Freedom of Information Act with a contractor. They don't have to tell you anything.
It's a blind, right? They really can put up a wall there. Exactly.
Exactly right. So Robert Bigelow is a billionaire. He's very interested in aerospace technologies. He's worked with NASA. He's worked in aerospace technologies with the various companies that he's created. And some years ago, he created the National Institute for Discovery Science, or NIDS, or NIDSCI for short. And they got a grant to study the phenomena happening at Skinwalker Ranch. So they went out there and they did a scientific study, and Bigelow funded it. Well, actually, back up. I think it was, I can't remember if Bigelow, yes, okay, let me correct the record. Bigelow funded the National Institute for Discovery Science, and the data was scientific, and I believe that the government became very interested in the project. So it was Bigelow financed it himself. However, this new project that I mentioned that's in these documents, that was government funding that was awarded to Bigelow's, one of Bigelow's new companies. And by the way, let me also say that within these documents that were released through the Freedom of Information Act, there were, aside from studying the alien, the UFO phenomenon, there they were also studying the paranormal. Mm. And they were studying Bigfoot and elves and whatever, you know, the paranormal. They had categories. They actually created different categories for this stuff. So the alien stuff and UFOs is in a different category, which is interesting, than the paranormal stuff. The paranormal stuff was near-death experiences and all that was in a different category, which I find interesting. So that's a piece of data that I forgot to relay when we were talking about that.
Sounds like a mystery school or something, like where they're trying to figure
out. Yeah, maybe. Because the paranormal is really weird. It's very strange. I am not a paranormal researcher because I can't put my hands on anything. You know, I mean, how can you be a paranormal researcher? I guess you can maybe kill yourself and then have somebody try and revive you and then report what you saw. But aside from that, how do you research the paranormal? There's nothing to put your hands on. So anyway, Bigelow is, as far as I know, received that grant, the $12 million grant, according to the documents. And so, again, his connection to the ranch, he's the one who founded and ran the NIDS. Very, very scientific study that they did on that ranch. The book is a great read, the one I referenced. And I want to say it's Hunt for the Skinwalker, but I always get confused if that was the name of the book or just the documentary. Hunt for the Skinwalker. That's right. I was correct. It's by Colm A. Keller. I got the name right, too. And George Knapp. And George Knapp, I talked to George. He spoke at True Legends UFO Conference. And so I had a chance to talk with George and get to know him a little bit and talk to him about Skinwalker Ranch. And yes, very bizarre. And I just published, by the way, a video on YouTube in which I discuss some of the paranormal aspects of the Skinwalker Ranch phenomenon and how I believe that at least some of it is perceptual manipulation, that it's not so much that weird things are happening on the ranch, because yes, they are, but it's more that some weird things are happening, but a lot of the weird things are happening as a result of your perception being manipulated. And I believe that the reason is to drive people off of the ranch, keep them away. Why? I think there's an alien base under there. And I discussed this, by the way, this theory of mine about a gray, and it's not only my theory, other people think this as well, that there's a gray alien base beneath the Skinwalker Ranch, and not just beneath the ranch. It's probably a very large base and it encompasses the ranch. But also I had an opportunity to talk about this with the late Kevin Burns, who is in fact the producer of, was the president of, he died a couple years ago, was the president of Prometheus Entertainment and the producer of Ancient Aliens, among a whole bunch of other shows. And Kevin and I were talking about developing a new show, and he wanted me to go on the ranch, on Skinwalker Ranch. And we were talking about, for his show, for the show that's going on, and we were talking about his theories and my theories, and he was actually agreed with me that he thinks that there may indeed be a gray alien base under that ranch. And I was going to go out there with my technology, actually. Me and my partner, Gary Haven, have a deep, penetrating, drone-operating GPR unit. Hmm. That we can get images in 3D of stuff but under the ground.
Oh.
And Kevin really was very interested in me going out to the ranch with that technology. Maybe it's a good thing I didn't.
Yeah. But because you're here and you're having a birthright conference. So we're glad you're still here today.
That's right. And unfortunately Kevin passed away before any of that could materialize. But anyway, Kevin was a very creative guy.
We got it. We have to dive into that a little deeper, I think, when we do our dumbs. We're still going to do a dumbs.
The dumb episode. State? The dumb state.
With you, Tim, where we talk about all the stuff that's going on under the ground. But I hadn't heard that about Skinwalker. I just find the connection just interesting that there's...
Yeah, in the Skinwalker phenomenon, I want people to realize that if you're sitting on your porch, and this happened in the Skinwalker book... This is one of the stories that they recount. If you're sitting on your porch at Skinwalker Ranch or anywhere in the world, and you suddenly see a couple of orbs approaching, floating through space, right? These orbs usually, they can be really any size, the size of a golf ball, size of a bowling ball, or size of a car, as you were talking about earlier. let's say a couple of bowling ball size orbs show up and start flying around. Understand that those orbs have the technological capability not only to screw with your perception, but also induce extreme dread, visceral dread. And furthermore, in the Skinwalker book, they also are able to incinerate dogs, apparently, because they did incinerate some dogs on the ranch. And so those orbs, just the orbs, and people say, well, that's supernatural. And I say, no, I think that's technological. I think those are reconnaissance drones that are dispatched from the saucers and from the, and by the way, and I know I'm just kind of, my brain's going in 10 directions right now, but you know, when you talk about saucers and you talk about cigar shaped craft, a lot of those cigar shaped craft are actually a whole bunch of saucers connected to each other. Like, you know, like a pack of lifesavers, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like those little lifesaver candies and the way that they're all,
it almost looks like they're smoking on the ends too. There's like a fog almost around them.
Yeah, I don't know, but I've heard, and this is of course just hearsay, but some ufologist or some military person said that when they get together like that, they can jump space. But that's what a lot of the cigar shaped craft are. It's a configuration of saucers that are sort of, you know, like lifesavers in a lifesaver role that are connected to one another, upright, connected to one another. And many people have reported seeing the orbs dispatched from the saucers. So the saucers dispatch the orbs.
I think we posted a video of that. It almost looked like they were shooting fireballs out of them.
Yeah, they shoot out. It looks like flares. They come shooting out of the saucers. But those orbs are not flares. They're reconnaissance drones. And they're exceedingly advanced drones. I mean, they're capable of and I just also want to remind people that we human beings are very close to developing advanced holographic projections. And we already can project holograms. This is done at concerts sometimes. I forget what's
Tupac.
Tupac. That's Tupac. Right. Wasn't that at Jay-Z's conference?
Yeah, it was like Tupac.
Coachella.
It was like Coachella. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we can do that, what can the Greys do with holograms? So, you know, can the orbs project holographic, lifelike holographic projections? I think they can. And so, it sounds like magic. It sounds like supernaturalism. But remember what Arthur C. Clarke said, that any sufficiently advanced technology will look like magic to us. Mm. So we're talking about very sophisticated technology. And so my point in talking about the orbs is, if those orbs can induce dread, a sense of dread in people, not because of the orb, not because, oh, look, an orb, and then suddenly you're afraid of it. No, that the orb actually instantly induces visceral dread in a person and begins to screw with your perception and can deploy some kind of laser or something that can incinerate a dog as it did on Skinwalker Ranch or whatever. We're dealing with a level of technology that makes anything possible at that point, right? I mean, anything. Mm-hmm. And so I always lean towards the technological explanations, because that technology, for all intents and purposes, is what we would call supernaturalism. I mean, it is what we call supernaturalism. I don't like to use that term, but it's what people call supernaturalism. If you see a UFO disappear, so many people assume it's supernaturalism. If you see a stargate open up in the sky, a portal, and a saucer come flying through it, which I have a good friend of mine who did, in broad daylight.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Very credible guy, professional guy. A lot of people will say, well, that's some kind of supernatural thing. No, that's most likely an Einstein-Rosen bridge. It's most likely a wormhole. And it's exactly what we'd expect a wormhole to look like, by the way. And we say, well, we don't have the energy to produce a wormhole. Well, we don't, but they do. They have matter-antimatter reactors. So, and that's the kind of energy you would need. That's precisely the kind of energy you would need to produce a wormhole. So it's technology. It's technology. And furthermore, what do angels use? Do they use supernaturalism or do they use technology? I argue that they use the latter. They use technology.
So has their technology gotten better since, say, the dawn of human history and now?
That's a very good question. Is their technology still developing? Or did they hit the peak of technological development? I have no idea. That's a fascinating question. I guess we're going to find out one day. But
like the Mount Hermon.
Yeah, that's
the Mount Hermon days. Like you said, they came down and landed craft on top of Mount Hermon. So if you think about advancements of human technology versus theirs, if they were landing UFOs on Mount Hermon, then what could they land on Mount Hermon now?
That's a great question. Are they continually advancing and developing their technology just like us? I mean, I think that the most rational answer would be yes. And then, of course, I get bombarded all the time. People say, no, angels were already created with all the knowledge and blah, 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 blah. And I just don't understand where people, like, where are you getting that from? You can have an opinion like that, but that's all it is. It's just like I can have an opinion on whether or not they're advancing their technology. I don't know. I've never talked to one, you know, and people can have, you can have your opinions without being dogmatic about them. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I get blasted. I mean, you guys have no idea. I get blasted every day. I'm kind of the lone wolf out here who's trying to get practical about these things rather than always diverting to supernatural explanations.
Well, I say that because some of these UFO videos now, they look like crazy. They look crazier than the old photos, you know? They look like some of the older UFO photos look like discs, and they almost look a little bit more... Like, obviously, they had advanced technology. These things are flying around with, like you said, they're pulling the energy right out of space. But now they almost look like these crazy, wild LED flying...
Well, I want you to consider that... Remember that these craft are able to warp the fabric of space around them. They're using gravity waves so they can, so the contours of the craft from our perspective look warped, right? And that's why the craft look like they're sometimes like they're changing shape, because they're being warped in that gravity, in that gravity distortion. It's not that they're actually changing shape. It's that, you know, it's very much like on a hot day, you know, if you see a car coming down the road and you're in the desert and that haze is coming off the road, that car sort of looks warped and it almost looks like there's a mirror image of it and it sort of looks blobby or whatever and warped in the lights until it gets closer, right? And it's kind of the same thing, or at least the same principle, that the space, the atmosphere around those vehicles is getting warped. And so to our eyes, it looks like the contour of the object is changing, when in fact it's not. It's space that's being warped around the object. So we have to keep that in mind. Now, that's not to say that they have some kind of a nanotech, that they don't have some kind of a nanotech technology that can actually reconfigure itself. In fact, the late Colonel Philip Corso, actually in his manuscript, I don't know about his book because his book wasn't entirely, there was a little bit of purposeful misinformation in his book, but in his manuscript called Dawn of a New Age, which not many people know exists, that's his tell-all manuscript, where he wanted to tell everything without any kind of spin or misinformation for his own protection. He was at the end of his life. He talks about, I forget what he calls it, but he describes a kind of metal that the Greys were using in which the atomic configuration could change within the metal. So the metal, almost like a nanotechnology, that it's reconfiguring like a transformer or something, but not exactly like a transformer. Almost more, it would be more like, if we're going to reference a movie, it'd be more like Terminator, that metallic guy that would melt and then his body would. Yeah, exactly. So something like along those lines, using nanotechnology or something. So is that possible? Is that in play as well? That very likely could be play, but I don't know. Nobody does. But I do know what I feel like I do know, and what I feel like the government just admitted in these papers, right? Because they're talking about radiation burns. How do you get radiation burns? When you are in proximity of the craft, and now we're running out of time, when you're in proximity of the craft, by the way, these pilots who get close to the craft, their perception is screwed with. They get radiation burns and they have missing time. Why? because they're entering a distorted gravity field. That's why. And they're getting close to a reactor. And that reactor is a matter-antimatter reactor. So there is radiation. And there's a time, there's a gravity distortion around the craft. And that would explain the missing time. Because if you have a craft and it's producing gravity waves around it and it's distorting, it's warping space-time around it, then according to Einsteinian physics, the time is going to pass at a different rate within that gravity distortion than without. That's why you can have a UFO hover over a cow, pull the cow up into the craft, a saucer, pull it up into the craft, you know, desanguinize it or whatever that's called, suck all the blood out of it, core out the eyes and everything, and then drop it back on the ground and be gone. And if you're the farmer, you just saw that cow 3 minutes ago. You look back, the cow's been completely cored out, no blood laying on the ground. And you say, how could that have happened in 3 minutes? Mm-hmm. The answer, it didn't happen in 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. The answer is that cow was enveloped in a time distortion. It was a distortion around the warping of space-time, and probably 10 minutes passed, not 3 or 15 or 20. And I know that's crazy, but it's just physics. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I'm not saying that I'm a physicist, but I think I understand the fundamentals of these principles, having listened to physicists like Bob Lazar.
I love it, Tim. Always breaking our brains.
Breaking my own brain. Wondering if I'm making any sense.
You got to do your best Schwarzenegger impression. Mimetic polyalloy.
We had a Predator reference already, too, didn't we? Dylan, you son of a...
Yeah, we're just doing Schwarzenegger quotes over here, and you're talking to us about Einstein's theory.
Well, I was thinking about movies too, like when we were talking about like the Greys and the Hybrids, and like one of the great 80s B movies of all time, They Live, with Rowdy Piper.
Yeah.
When he puts the glasses That's on right. and he can see him. It makes me think of that. Like
perceptual manipulation.
Right.
And we know that human perception is easily manipulated. Right. Ayahuasca, anyone?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I mean, it feels like it's more and more, it's all the above. You know, they're doing it.
Probably.
All. And we got to talk about crop circles at some point.
Yeah, crop circles can also be created by orbs, apart from being created by orbs, it's very easy to make crop circles with a board and ropes as well.
Yeah, we've seen that. Yeah.
I shouldn't say very easy. It's doable. Let's say it can be done.
Well, the ones I've seen that they look crazy, and all the stalks are like more fried over. Yeah. They're not pushed mm-hmm. over
and unbroken. They're like in many crisp. Cases. Yeah.
Yeah.
Orbs can make those crop circles, and so. I mean, my God, when you're dealing with this kind of technology, anything is possible. Anything and everything is possible. It's all magic to us. If I had a guy teleported from let's say 300 AD sitting next to me right now, he would be almost fainting with awe and wonder, looking at all of these magical contraptions I have all around me, and that I'm looking at other human beings on this magical, you know, rectangle in front of me, and the lights in my room, and just thinking, wow, this guy must be a god. He's controlling the light and everything and you know, telepathically talking to people on in a different dimension through this rectangle. I mean, that's what he would be thinking, correct? I mean, I think that's what he.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's the way that we perceive advanced technology in much the same way.
That's true. And maybe it's just there's some angel out there like Banksy just tagging cornfields. And it really isn't that big of a deal.
Exactly. Like, that's always a possibility. That's always a possibility. It is. It really is. Not everything has to have some kind of a transcendental motive. Maybe some things are doing stuff because they're bored. You know, I don't know. You know, like the Bigfoot creatures. Maybe we're overcomplicating those things. Like we were talking about in the beginning. Maybe they're just these, you know, gorilla-like smart creatures that are just out there hanging out and don't want to be seen by anybody. Smart enough to know to stay away from humans. I don't know. There's so many possibilities.
Well, Tim, we can keep going forever, and I love it. We'll probably have you back pretty soon, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
I was going to say, people can come do this live with us, up close and personal, in Nashville. Come to Nashville, 6th to the 7th of May. There's still tickets left. Yeah. You know, come meet the Blurry Bros. Come meet me and Gary Haven, Mancal Muller, Joe Allen, and all the other people that are going to be there, and hang out with a bunch of other like-minded people. You know what? I meet people at these events that I do, and they become lifelong friends of mine. some of my best friends to this day are people who've gone on my trips and come to the conferences. So it's a really great way to make new friends.
Love it. Yeah.
Good thing we became lifelong friends before this. So.
That's right. So read a Birthright, read your Birthright book and watch a couple 80s movies and get your references.
That's
ready.
A great combination right there. Right. Read Birthright and then in between watch some 80s movies. You know, I probably watched a bunch of 80s movies while I was writing the book. So
that's right.
Well, Tim, we can't wait to see you here in Nashville, yeah, and appreciate your time as always.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. Can't wait to see you guys.
TimothyAlberino.com.
TimothyAlberino.com. That's right. And go to my subscribe to my YouTube channel. That's where I hang out most of the time. And it's just Timothy Alberino. Just go type in Timothy Alberino. There you'll see my YouTube channel. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. Going to be more active on Twitter now that Elon Musk has got a bigger share in it. So,
well, let's see you there. Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys. Time, hey, thanks for letting me ramble again for an hour or whatever it was.
We love it. Hey, Tim. Yeah. Tim, real quick though, do you have Do you have no.
A Bigfoot call?
That would be amazing. Actually, we're going to save that for the show. I'm sure.
Not yet.
The actual, not yet.
We're working on one for when we go look for Bigfoot.
Nate will help you with that. He practices on his back porch like every night.
Yeah. Maybe I do. Maybe
don't forget,
do.
You guys are going to the VIP thing, right?
With dinner, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
I'll keep reminding my wife about that.
So that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. In fact, I think I'm more looking forward to that than the conference. Right? That's the fun. The conference is the work.
I know. The editing. Like my job starts now.
I know what that's like. This is the fun part. If I get sick or something before the conference, you guys got to be ready to fill in with some presentations.
Oh, fantastic. I'll do one on.
We'll just set up a couple mics on a stage and you guys can just do Blurry Creatures for a couple hours.
I'll do a cigar presentation and one on bourbon. I'm trying to think of what things I can do here.
Hey, I know there's a lot of people there who would like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be doing some cigars and bourbon at the VIP thing, I think.
Fantastic. Let me know what I can bring.
Well, cigars is something that. That me and Gary, every time I'm with Gary, we smoke cigars. And so there'll be a group of cigar smokers hanging out at the VIP thing.
He's got another. Here we are.
I'm coming in, by the way, Wednesday night. Coming in Wednesday night. And then, my God, the trying to get tickets out of here, it's crazy. It's crazy. The airline, they're in chaos right now. And it was a pain in the butt. But so I had to fly in on Wednesday night because there was like all the flights on Thursday were just sending me all over the country, you know, four stops. Yeah. So I'm going to be in all day Thursday and then of course all day Friday. So you guys, we're kicking off the conference with the Blurry Creatures thing. Now you guys can, if you want, you can set up a table. You can bring some, I don't know if you have a banner or something like that.
Nate, what do we got, Nate?
In the background.
We have seven shirts left to sell. We could bring those.
I'm going to put Luke in a Bigfoot costume.
Like Andre the Giant.
That's not a bad idea, actually. Just have somebody in a Bigfoot costume wearing a Blurry Creatures t-shirt on the costume wandering around the conference.
Holding a sign.
Hey, it might happen in the middle of one of your presentations. If Bigfoot walks by in the back and does his look and keeps going.
I'll have to deploy my Bigfoot call.
Just don't worry. Gosh,
yeah, and I'll come running. It'll work. It'll work for the first.
We should.
Now that you say that, that is such a great marketing idea. Have somebody dress up in a Bigfoot costume with a Blurry Creature t-shirt or something walking around in a conference. Yeah. I'm telling you, we'll get it on film. Yeah. He can be sitting on the stage behind us as we're talking.
With a t-shirt gun.
Bigfoot smoking a pipe.
With a t-shirt gun, just shooting shirts out of the crowd. Hey, boys, I have this call in 1 minute, exactly. So I got to jump.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, dudes. Bye. Let's go. Next time.